So we're on Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, just above the middle of the Amud line of the Mesillas. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan. Ketzad Tosfon. How do you write? Now, before we talked about how you write Tefillin Shel Rosh, we said you have to have four compartments, and each one has a separate parasha. We talked about what if you were to write them on one long piece of parchment, how you would go about. According to Rashi, the piece of, since the parasha has to go in vertically, you would have to have, they have to be like four notches, like four finger-shaped things sticking up from the piece of parchment to fit into the four compartments, right? And according to Rabbi Natan, according to Tosfos, who holds they should be put in laying down, then you could have it going in and out like this.
Like this? According to
Tosfos? Like according to Tosfos, you put them in laying down. Yeah. But, okay. So, now we're going to talk about the Shoryan. Turn it up on. Case that
Tosfos... any difference for Rashi and Tosfos?
Well, it's one of them. No, we're going to see through in the famous Machlokes of Rashi and Rabbi Natan about how we make, about the order of the parashah. Hold on. Hold on. Tanarabon, Kates and Kosvan, how do you write the Tfilah, Kates and Kosvan Tfilah Choyad, how do you write the Tfilah Choyad? Kosval O Echad, there you write the four parashiyas on one piece of parchment. Vim Kosva Ba'arba Otis, if you wrote it on four separate pieces of parchment, Vim Yechab Ba'ayas Echad, and you put them all into one bias, Yosef, then you also Yosef. However, the Tzorek Ladavik, however, in that case, you would have to take these four separate pieces of parchment and glue them together. Rashi says also you could also sew them together. Mishum shenema, because the positive v'hoyolachol ois al yodcha, because it says it should be for a sign on your hand, meaning one, and lacha means it has to be for you also. Kishem sheois achas b'chutz, just like it looks like only one thing on the outside. You don't have visible bakim separately over there because it looks like one solid piece. So also, the same way it has to be one ois on the inside, meaning Rashi says, if you have separate pieces of parchment in there, when you put on the tefillin, you will feel them jiggling around in there. Therefore, you can't do that. Therefore, even if you have them written on separate pieces of parchment, you have to stick them or glue them together in order that they should be one piece. Divrei Rav Yehuda. That's what Rav Yehuda says, that you have to stick them together like that. Rav Yossi says you don't need to do that. Even if you don't have the individual pieces of parchment stuck together, it's okay. The tefillin are still kosher. Rav Yossi still agrees. Better to write them on one long strip of parchment, which is of course how we do it. But
we do it on
the shoyad on one parchment and
things sticking out.
No, no things sticking out. The shoyad, remember, the shoyad is only one component. The shoyad on the outside, you don't have any grooves or anything. The shoyad, you have one compartment, and if you were to open up the tefillin, you would see there's one big hole inside. It's one big hole inside. What they do is they write the four parashiyos on one strip, they roll it up, and they stick it into the hole. They write the four parashiyos on one long strip. No, so you're not going to feel it jiggling around.
Why can't you do that with the rosh?
Because the shor rosh is supposed to be four separate compartments. You know? Because that's what the Torah says. Toitophos, and we were talking yesterday how Toitophos. We said, yeah. So therefore, the shor rosh, you have each parashiyah is written and placed in a separate compartment. And the compartments can actually be gently pried apart. That's what I was mentioning at the end yesterday about glue between them. When Sofrim checks fill-in, one of the things they do.
You can move it?
Very, very carefully. You don't want to ruin the squareness of it, but yes. So Sofrim will do. They'll take an X-Acto knife or something and put it gently between one compartment and the next and see if they're glued together. And if so, they'll try to separate them without ruining the squareness of it.
This is Adoraita.
One of our local surfers. Okay. This is my son's film. Okay. Onward. Okay, so again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi agree that Choyad, you should write it all on one long strip of parchment, the four parashiyos. But Rabbi Yehuda is saying, if you wrote them on separate pieces, you have to glue them together. And Rabbi Yossi says that's not necessary.
So that's Choyad.
For the Choyad, yes. Amr Rabbi Yossi, umoy de li Rabbi Yehuda, because it says, l'cha l'ois al yadcha. It has to be one ois, and it should be for you just as much as for everybody else. Just like everybody else sees it as only one thing, you should also feel it as only one thing. Okay. However, Rabbi Yehuda Berebi is a nickname, meaning like the Chacham, Rashi says. Rabbi Yehuda does agree with me. Suppose somebody does not have a tefillin shel yad, v'yesh lo shtei tefillin shel rosh, but he has an extra shel rosh. So what do you do? Shetoyla ora lachas mehen. What he can do is he can take one of those shel roshes, he can cover it with another piece of leather, so that you don't see the four compartments and the shins and whatever.
Put it on his arm.
And put it on his arm, yeah. Umanicha, and then he can put it on his arm. So the question is, what do you mean? Moja hainu plotai. Isn't that the very same machlokas that they have? Now, what do you have? If you start with the shel rosh, each parasha is written on a separate piece of parchment and rolled up and placed and folded up and placed in there. Now, even if you put a piece of leather on top of it, they're still separate parashas. Rabbi Huda is saying they have to be stuck together, they have to be glued together. How is that for the shel yad? So how is that going to work? What do you mean, Rabbi Yossi is saying that Rabbi Huda agrees with me? The answer is, Amar Rava midivarav shel Rabbi Yossi calls the boy Rabbi Huda. Based on what Rabbi Yossi says, we can see that Rabbi Huda eventually changed his mind and says that you don't actually. Even Rabbi Huda then agrees in the end that with the shel yad, you don't have to stick the pieces together. Again, everybody does agree with the shel yad, it's best to have it on one long strip. But if you didn't, in the end, Rabbi Huda agrees with Rabbi Yossi that you don't have to stick them together. It's okay for them to be separate pieces. Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Amy, so how could it be? Is that so, that you're able to take a shel rosh and turn it into a shel yad? Don't we know that Rav Hananya sent a message in the name of Rav Yechanan? Tefillah shel yad oisin oisah shel rosh. You're allowed to take a tefillah shel yad and turn it into a shel rosh, but not the other way around. The shel rosh ain oisin oisah shel yad, but you're not allowed to take a tefillah shel rosh and turn it into a shel yad. Because you're not allowed to take something down from a higher level of kedusha to a lower level. So that the next part of that was what we learned the other day. The part about over there, if you have a worn out sefer Torah, that you can't cut out a piece from it and use it for a mezuzah, because it's the same thing. What we mean over here is the shel rosh. The Rashi says the tefillin shel rosh has greater kedusha because you have most of the name. You have the name of Hashem Shin Dalad Yud is represented in the tefillin. You have the shins on the two sides of the shel rosh. You have the dalad in the knot in the back of it.
Shin here and shin
the
on
shin.
Right.
So you have a shin on the right and shin on the left. We're going to talk soon. You have a three-headed shin and a four-headed shin. We'll get to that soon. You have the dalad-shaped knot on the back. And then so that's already two letters of Hashem's name, shin and dalad. And then you have the yud in the shoyadah. So you have most of the name of Hashem is associated with the shorosh. Therefore, Rashi says the shorosh has greater kedusha. So therefore, and we're saying, therefore, you can't take a shel rosh and turn it into a shel yad. So what is Rav Yossi saying that you can do that? If you have an extra shel rosh and you're missing a shel yad, then you can take that and turn it into... No, if it's saying you're not allowed to take from kedusha chamorah, kedusha kala, then it wouldn't work. So the read, by the way, one of the rishonim gives a different reason why the shel rosh has greater kedusha. He says, because you put it on your head, you put it higher up on your body than your arm. Okay. Anyway, the point is...
Well, it could means that that's why you have more parashiyos also.
You have the same four parashiyos in each one. You just have them in four compartments in the one versus one versus in one compartment in the other. No, that doesn't make a difference in kedusha, but you do have though the shel rosh goes higher up on your head.
Because
then therefore you have four compartments. And it says lois, meaning one ois. Okay. So anyway, so the question is again, if the shel rosh has more kedusha for whatever reason, whether like Rashi says because it has more of the letters of Hashem's name, or because it's higher up on the body, or also because it has the, I think some of the Mephoshim explained, because it has the shins actually embedded into it, as opposed to the shel yad only has the letter of Hashem's name tied onto it.
You have how many parashiyos?
Four parashiyos and four parashiyos.
So why do we have more names?
You don't have more names, but you have two letters of Hashem's name, Shin, Dalad, Yud. Shin and Dalad are on the Shel Rosh. Only one letter, Yud, is on the Kesher of the Shel Yad. Therefore, in that sense, you have more letters of the name Shin, Dalad, Yud associated with the Shel Rosh than you do with the Shel Yad.
Okay.
Therefore, Rashi says it has greater
kedusha.
Inside the bottom, of course, it's the same one. But you also have, again, the Shel Rosh has the shin embossed on the outside of it, whereas the Shel Yad doesn't.
But that also
contributes to the greater kedusha of the Shel Rosh. Anyway, so that's the point. So therefore, we have a contradiction. We're saying Rav Yochanan is telling us that you can't turn a shel rosh into a shel yad, but Rav Yossi is saying you can. The answer is Lakasha, Hobatika, Hobachabsa. The difference is, are we talking about old tefillin that have already been used at least once as a shel rosh? Then yes, you're not allowed to downgrade them to a shel yad. That's Atikta, that's old ones. As opposed to Bechadza, if they're new ones, if you made them as a shel rosh, but you've never actually worn them yet, then you would be allowed to turn it into a shel yad. Now, the Gemara points out not everybody would agree with that, because Ulamanda Omar has monomilti, because we have an opinion, we have a machlokas Abaye and Rava in Sanhedrin in a different connection. There it's in connection with Tachrisim for a mess, but it's the same basic concept, which is there's an opinion there has monomilti, just designating something for a certain purpose of Kedusha is enough to already give it that Kedusha. So if we take that view, then once you've already made the shorosh and it was made designated for the head, then already it has that greater kedusha.
By the designation.
So according to that, if we say that, well, the manda omer has monomilti, then you would have to say to ask me alayom ikra. Then you would have to say Rav Yossi's scenario when you're allowed to turn a shorosh into a shoyad would be to begin with you made the shorosh on a tnai that if I should need to turn it into a shoyad, then I will be allowed to do that. So in that case, even the opinion that says that has monomilfi will agree that if you made such a tnai, then that overrides it.
Lama Jalad Amadei. Let me ask you a question. I had when I was in Europe who was seeing the Nazis.
Okay.
And the only thing that he took with him was his tefillin.
Okay.
In order to save his life, he had to sit on his tefillin.
So, okay, you have, I don't know about tefillin specifically, but you have a sefer Torah we established before, the kedusha of it, according to most Rishonim, in many ways, greater than that of tefillin, and you have a case in brachos that says that if you're traveling and it's a dangerous time, then you're allowed to put the sefer Torah on a junkie, for example, in a way that normally would be disrespectful, like flung behind you or whatever, because it's a dangerous situation. So I guess a similar concept would apply here. Okay. Onward. Okay, Tananabam. Kesad Sidram, what is the order of the parashiyas in the Tefillin? Kadesh li v'hoyaki v'yacha mimin. So you have, from the right side, you have Kadesh and v'hoyaki v'yacha, the two parashiyas that are in, the two sections that are in Parashas Void. Shema v'hoyim shemayim yismur. On the left side, you have Shema and v'hoyim shemayim.
Kadesh
li v'hoyaki v'yacha. So Rashi, now, here's where you have the Macholikas Rashi and Tosfos. Because Rashi understands like this. First of all, the Gemara is going to say soon, we're going to talk about soon, that according to both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, when we say right and left, we mean from the point of view of somebody who's looking at you head on. So not from the point of view of you, the wearer of the tefillin, but rather from the point of view of somebody standing in front of you. We go from right to left. So Rashi learns like this. When we say Kaddish v'hayikiriyach ha-mimin, it means you start from the right side. Here is Kaddish, here is v'hayikiriyach. Then you continue. In the left half of it, you have Shema and Bahasa. So therefore, they go in that order. Tosfos asks, in that case, then why is the Gemara putting them as two separate divisions? Let the Gemara just say, Kaddish, Bahaya Kiviyaka, Shema, Bahaya and Shemaya. Why say from the right versus from the left? So here is where Rabbeinu Tam comes in and says what the Gemara means is, Kaddish, Bahaya Kiviyaka, going from the right. Then you start over again from the left and go Shema, Bahaya and Shemaya. Therefore, the result is,
Kaddish.
Instead of Shema, V'hoyah, and Shemaya, so Rabbeinu Tam ends up with Kaddish, V'hoyah, Tiviyacha, V'hoyah, and Shemaya, Shema. So the way to remember it is, you have, again, remember you have the two shins on the sides of the Shorosh, so the shin of Shema and the shin of Kaddish are next to the respective shins, and you have, that's the point of Rabbeinu Tam, and you have what's called Havayas to Emsa, the two parashiyas that begin with Vahoya are in the middle, Vahoya Itiviyacha and Vahoya in Shemaya. That is how Rabbeinu Tam holds. Now, since the Gemara is going to go on to say that if you put the parashiyas out of order, then the apostle, it comes out, Rashi's still an apostle according to Rabbeinu Tam and vice versa.
Who is it?
Well, because the Gemara is going to say too. The Gemara is going to say soon. They have to be in the exact order.
Maybe
they have to be in the... No. The Gemara is going to say soon. If they're out of order, then they're posted. Now, so
Do you have time to tell us about the other opinions?
Yes. So we have a lot to talk about this, actually. I mean, I'll try to keep it brief because we also have Gemara to learn, but yes. First of all, this machlokes is not original to Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. It turns out that you have evidence from long, long before then. You have machlokes already like this among the Gaonim. The Rambam mentions in one of his Tshuvos, that originally we used to follow the shita of Rabbeinu Tam, and then somebody came and explained to us that that's wrong and it should be like Rashi, and so we got rid of our old tefillin and we made them like Rashi. I mean, he doesn't call them Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, but you understand the point, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
That Rishonim bring that at one point the platform on the caver of Yechezkel Hanavi, where he's buried in Bavel, because that's where he did most of his Nevorah, at one point the platform over his caver fell down, and they found in there a pair of tefillin that was written according to Rashi's version. So therefore, so some of the Rishonim said, well, there you go. You have a proof that there were ancient tefillin that they were written according to Rashi. Then you had other Rishonim and Achronim who argued on the contrary, which is like the Rambam also. Other Rishonim and Achronim argued on the contrary. They must have been puzzled tefillin. That's why they put them in Gneza. That's why they put them into that platform over there to put them in Gneza. So it's a long running machloka. The majority of the poskim passed in like Rashi. However, it says in Shulchan Aruch that a Yorei Shemayim should also wear Rabbi Natan's tefillin to be yotze that shita also. Alpi Kabbalah, both of them are important. One is Moichin de Abba, one is Moichin de Ima. So
what's the one? Which one is Abba?
I think Rashi's is Moichin de Abba and Rabbi Natan's is Moichin de Ima, although I'm not sure. Anyway, the point is they both have a great importance. Alpi Kabbalah, and therefore, so you have by the Sfaradim they wear small tefillin. They put them on both. At the same time, Ashkenazim were larger tefillin, so there's no room to. So the minhag in the Velt for a long time was that you put them on, and the minhag in Lubavitch for a long time also was you do put on Rabbeinu Tam, but generally only after you get married. One idea that is the Ma'aril mentioned, the Ma'aril mentions in Minhagim Ma'aril, he says I can't.
That's not
Kabbalah. No, it's a one second. The Ma'aril mentions in Minhagim Ma'aril, he says I can't even understand how boys who aren't married yet can possibly put on tefillin. You're not supposed to have tefillin while you're wearing tefillin, and how can a guy who's of age and not married yet, how is he able to avoid tefillin? Nevertheless, the fact is, you start putting on tefillin from by mitzvah. But therefore, the minhag develops that therefore, okay, so at least as far as Rabbeinu Tam, which is not as much of a chiyuv as Rashi, you start wearing them only after you get married. Purim Lamed Vav, the Rebbe started talking about the idea that nowadays we're closer to Issa the Meshicha, and it talks about Mizoya, the idea that Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin are more closely associated with Yemosa Mashiach. Therefore, we should start putting them on from by mitzvah age, or actually from when we start putting on Rashi, 2 months before by mitzvah age, and therefore that became
in the Zohar,
it talks about both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, and it talks about both orders, and it mentions that Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin are more associated with what of the love.
So the Zohar talks about both. But here it just says
here it just said the Gemara, the Gemara deliberately put it in this ambiguous way in order that we can understand it like Rashi or like Rabbeinu Tam. So actually, the Rebbe once talks about it in a Sicha. The Rebbe once asked, the Rebbe asked, wherever this machloekus came up, I mean, if you look at tefillin, you look at your father's tefillin, you look at your grandfather's tefillin, what kind of question, how did there ever develop a machloekus, what order the parashiyos should be? And the Rebbe answers, evidently, what it must be is that machloekus existed all the way since the Eidishter originally gave the mitzvah to Moshe. You had some people wrote it one way, some people wrote it the other way. Each one had what to be klomachan. Eventually, the machloekus became, so which one is the ikur and which one is not? And that's how it comes down to nowadays. Okay, so now you mentioned
to Rabbi Natan, it's Shin, Havaye,
Shin. Right, and according to Rashi, you have, they're in the order, Shin, Havaye, because according to Rashi, it's in the order that they are in the Torah. Now you also, you mentioned you have two other Zorim also, you have Shimush Rabba and Raivad. Shimush Rabba and Raivad are actually the mirror images of Rashi and Rabbi Natan. So again, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam are both taking the view that you do the parashiyos in the order as if you're looking at the children. So Kadesh is here, Vahayuki Viacha is here, and then you have the machlokes where the other two are. Shimush Rabba and Raivad start from this side. They say you go from the right side of the person wearing the tefillin. So therefore, Shimush Rabba is the opposite of Rashi. He puts Shema before Vahayim Shemaya, but in this direction. The Raivad puts them like Rabbeinu Tam, but again in the opposite direction. So very few people wear the four pairs of tefillin. It's meant only for Yechidus Gula. The Rebbeim used to wear them. Rabbi Chaim used to wear them. Certain rare people wear them, but most people don't. It's not. There's reasons for it. Alpi Kabbalah, but Alpi Nigla, actually, there's also Reb Chaim Brister pointed out a logical reason why we're not kosher for those. He says because we wear the tefillin on the head like this. With the ma'avarta, which we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara on top, and the kitsa, the main body of the tefillin hanging down. But if you were to wear them upside down, you're also yotze.
Really? Yeah.
If you were to wear them upside down like this, if you were to put in the resua the other way around, wear them with the kitsa on top, then you would be yotze. Therefore, in other words, in effect, a Rashi pair of tefillin is a Shimush Rabba pair just worn the wrong way around. A Rabbeinu Tam one is a Raivad pair, just worn the wrong way around. To be kosher, to that extent that you should have to wear it the right way around, that we're not.
Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is really Raivad, but
Well, it's also between the Ivan and Shemusha Rabba, right? That's what I'm saying. Now Shemusha Rabba is from the times of the Gaonim, or maybe even to the Rabban and Sevaroi. So you see that this Machloikas goes back hundreds of years before Rashi and Ibn Tam. That's the point. Yeah.
Shemusha Rabba was where?
Shemusha Rabba was one of the Rabban and Sevaroi, or one of the early Gaonim. It's the name of a place.
But where?
I don't know. We can bother with it. Yeah, so they ask his only going why he doesn't wear it up in a Tam tefillin, and he answered because if you're going to be kosher for all the shittas, you'd have to wear 64 pair of tefillin. Because besides the difference in the order of the parashiyos, you also have the question, do you put him in standing up or laying down, and how you tie the knot, and so on and so forth. So yeah.
Oh, what did you wear?
Yeah. What?
What did you wear?
So he wore only Rashi's tefillin.
You saw the picture of him wearing
Rashi's tefillin. Yeah, okay, come on. All right, let's go on.
You can't
see
inside the boxes?
Yeah, okay, come on. All right, let's go.
You need to get your eyes.
Okay, so the question, so the question is, again, so we said in the Braisa that the Seder is Kaddish and Vahoya Kiviyaka on the right, Shema Vahoya and Shemaya on the left. So the question is, Vahotanya Itzchol. What we learned it the other way around. We learned that Kaddish and Vahoya Kiviyaka are on the left and Shema Vahoya and Shemaya on the right. I'm going to buy it like Kasha, Kan Yiminish or Kurda, Kan Yiminish or Mania. It depends whether you're looking at it from the perspective of the right side of the person who's reading it, like as if he's standing in front of you, or the perspective of the person who's wearing the tefillin. That kodeh kesidron. But when you're reading the parashiyos, they should be in the order. So according to Rashi, what it means is literally they should be in the order that they are in the pesukim. Shema comes before v'hoyim and Shemaya, therefore they have to be in that order. What? Shema is in v'hoyim kanan. V'hoyim and Shemaya is an eighth. So according to Rashi, when the Gemara says Akoda Koda Kesidron, it's telling us that the idea is you have to be able to read them as if like you were to open up each bias and read each parashah in order. They're going to come out in the order in which they were written in the Torah. Therefore, Shema before Vahayim Shemaya. Rabbi Natam, who holds that they're not according to the order in the Torah, he's going to have to understand that that Koda Kesidron means that when you're opening them up, you're going to be reading them according to the order that we said before. You're going to be reading Kaddish Vahayim Kiviyaka from the right, and then you'll start from the left and read Shema and Vahayim Shema.
Still the Kesidron.
Yeah, well, so it's Kesidron if you start this end, then this side, and then this side, right? Amar of Hanano Omarab, Heshlis Pashiyas Seaf Solis. If you were to switch around the order of the Pashiyas, then the tefillin would be puzzled. Amar Abaya, Sabaya says on that. Yeah. Amar Abaya, Loyamoran Ella Gavaisa, Lebraisa, or Braisa Le Gavaisa. Now, Abaya says that would only apply if you mixed up an inner Pashiyas with an outer Pashiyas. So let's take, for example, the first two Pashiyas, because everybody agrees on the order of those. Kaddish and Vahaya Kiviyasa. Everybody agrees that Kaddish is on an outer compartment, according to both Rashi and Abed Tam. It's in this compartment.
It's the first compartment,
and Vahaya Kiviyaka is in the next one. So if you were to flip them around, if you were to put Vahaya Kiviyaka here and Kaddish here, then Abaya is saying, we're saying it's false. Then that's when Rav is saying they're false. Avo, Gavaisa, Gavaisa, Graisa, Graisa, but Abaya continues. If you were to flip around the two inner ones or the two outer ones, so let's say, for example, in a pair of Rashi's tefillin, if you have what you're supposed to have, again, Kaddish, Vahaya Kiviyaka, Shema, Vahaya and Shemaya, so Abaya is saying, if you put Shema over here and Vahaya Kiviyaka over here, but you still have Kaddish and Vahaya and Shemaya in their respective places, then it would be kosher, says Abaya. And similarly, if you were to flip around the two outer ones, hold on. So, similarly, if you were to flip around the two outer ones and leave the two inner ones where they're supposed to be. Omale Rava, but Rava asked him why. Maishna Gavaisa Lebraisa or Braisa Lagavaisa. Why are you telling me that if you flip around an inner and an outer one, meaning one of the side ones with one of the two side ones with one of the two middle ones? Gavaisa means the inside. It means the two in the middle. Deloy, and you're telling me that's no good, and you, Abaya, agree that it's possible. The half the boy lemechi aziro loikachavya, because you have a parasha that is supposed to be exposed to the outside air, like so to speak, it's supposed to be like you have one side of it is exposed. You have nothing over here except for the shin, and you have the other one behind the loikaboy lemechi aziro kachavya, and you're having the other way around, one that was supposed to be in the middle and is not supposed to be exposed on either side to the outside air now is. Well, then, by that logic, Braisa la Braisa la Gavaisa la Gavaisa. So if you flip around the two outer ones, or you flip around the two inner ones, Nami, then you have the same problem. Hach de boi lemech de avir de yamin, the one that's supposed to be exposed to the empty space on the right side, now kachaz yavir de smol. Now the left side of it is exposed to the outside air. Rid de smol kachaz yavir de yamin. So therefore, Ella Moshna, so therefore, therefore Rava says there's no difference. Anything where you did the parashiyas out of order, they will be possible.
What?
No matter how you did it, if any ordering, if you take one of the outside ones and put it on the other side, for example, what you've done is like this. This side of the parasha was supposed to be exposed to the air. And the Gemara talks about in Sanhedrin that the outer batim, the two outer compartments, are supposed to be open to the avir. Therefore, the Gemara talks about over there, if you were to add a fifth bias over there, you would have it would be possible, well, besides Baltoris, it would also, yeah, you're also possible in it because it's not Roya, it's
the Haver. If you change from
so
the
now
left
if you change
the
from the left to the right, the problem is now you have this one, this side of the parchment was supposed to be exposed to the air on this side.
But now
that's what Rava is saying. The Halachal Moshe Mishinai that tells us how the parashias and the trillin are supposed to be arranged, tells us, for example, Kaddish is supposed to be here, so that the right side of it is exposed to the outside.
That's
Rava is arguing. So therefore, you Abaye are trying to make a distinction between flipping inside, between flipping a middle one with an outside one versus flipping the two outside with the two inside. And Rava is saying it shouldn't matter.
As you said before, that's why we don't follow Shmush Rabba right. It was because Rashi and Tetris were mirror images and...
Well, so okay, so according to Rav Chaim Brisker.
Exactly, how come we don't flip it around?
Because according to Rav Chaim Brisker, you would answer, the fact is the tefillin are made in the proper way. You put them on backwards, that doesn't matter. The tefillin itself.
Over here,
here saying that doesn't matter.
No, we're saying that if you were to flip them around in the bias, you would have a
so
problem. But if you flip around the bias,
according
to Rava, you have to have them in the proper order, right? So again, Rashi would have his order, Rabbi Natan would have his order, et cetera. But yeah, and you can, and there's no changing them around. Exactly. If you do, then the tefillin are possible. But if you take the entire bias as it is, and flip it around, that's different. As a matter of fact, actually, that was Reb Chaim Brisker's point before, that even if you were to wear the tefillin upside down, that's what I'm saying. If you have the entire bias, as a matter of fact, actually, when it comes to the Shoyad, the Tzurma Sadesh mentions that in his time, there were different minhagim among the different Ashkenazic Jews. You had the people who lived near the Rhine, like the Jews in Worm, Speyer, and whatever, in those towns, versus the Jews of Austria, where one, I don't remember which is which, but one group used to wear their tefillin shoyab like we do, with the ktitza downward, and the other one used to wear it with the ktitza upward and the mavarta downward. So you see, with the shoyab, it's not a problem, so with the shorosh, it's apparently not a problem either. Okay. I mean, it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be you're wearing them the right way, but yeah. Okay. Onward. But
how come we don't get that? Yeah, we're backwards.
Because we don't have to. That's the you wear them a certain way.
Backwards.
So that Reb Chaim Brisker is saying that if you were to wear the shorosh backwards, you still yoist to the mitzvah.
And the
yad also.
Okay.
The point is, if you were to wear a rashi backward, then you've worn them. Then you've worn effectively you've worn a shemush rabba.
Yeah, but you wear it forward. And you're not asking it a shemush rabba.
Okay. No, because then you. I don't understand. Because we don't need to, because we don't need to be machmir to that extent. And again, I'll see Kabbalah, it's not shyness the most. Okay. But Omar of Hanano Omarav, Titura de Tfilin, Halach Lamashu Isinai. The Titura of the Tfilin, Titura, Rashi says, means a bridge. So therefore, it means a piece of the Tfilin that resembles that resembles one of the planks of a bridge. So Rashi describes as follows. Rashi's version of, now our Titura is the thing that sticks around, the base that sticks around the bias on all four sides. Sort of. Rashi's version of the Titura actually does not stick out on all four sides. Rashi explains it basically like this. You have the body, here actually it's the Shorosh let's talk about, because Rashi mentions it in connection with the Shorosh. So okay, you have the Shorosh, you have the four compartments in it, which are like the four fingers of a glove. After that, Rashi describes, you have the leather still extends downward from the four sides of it. You cut it a little bit on the first three sides, and then on the fourth side you leave a long thing sticking out in order that then you fold it underneath, and then that holds the parashias in place. If you look carefully at a pair of tefillin, if you ever see when a surfer opens them, you'll see that's how it is. You have the it's hinged over here. I mean, stone truss over here, painted truss, but it is hinged at the end over here. It's like a mouth. You can open it. That piece that closes, so Rashi describes, made from part of the leather. It's made from the same piece of leather as the ktitza, as the main part of the bias, and you fold it down underneath it in order to close up the bias. That's called the Titura.
It's really like a box.
Tosfos actually learned.
Is the lid of the box?
In a certain sense, you could say. I mean, like this is the lid at the bottom, but yeah. Tosfos actually argues on that and says that Tosfos says that we're not noyig to make the Keturah and the Ksitza out of one piece of leather. In Tosfos' times, and for a long time after that, the minhag was that instead they made the Keturah out of a separate piece of leather. That then, so you'd have the bias would be made out of they'd make one piece with the bias for four compartments, and then they would flip it into the Keturah and sew them together. Nowadays, that tefillin are usually made gatsis. Nowadays, it usually by tefillin that are made out of very hard leather, like we get nowadays. Then we've gone back to Rashi's way of making them all out of one piece. And so it's a time, because usually batim were made out of soft leather. It was impossible to do that and still have them keep their shape. The problem would be, especially you pull on the rasua, you're going to pull the bias out of shape. We're going to say soon the bias has to be square. So in Tosfos' time, for practical reasons, they had to make them out of separate pieces. Nowadays, we make them again out of one piece. So that's the Keturah. Omer Abaye, I'm about to just feel an halacha of Moshe Mitzinai. Abaye says,
everybody agrees that the Rosh has to have a shin on each side.
That's when we get to that later, yes. Another halacha l'moshe m'sinai is that the tefillin have to have a ma'avarta. There's a few different explanations in returning what the ma'avarta is, but the most basic explanation, and Rashi explains it again, when you have that flap of the tefillin that you fold underneath it and then sew it closed to keep the tefillin closed, you make that flap stick out behind the bias of the tefillin a little bit, and you make that there should be, there's a hole running from one end to the other in it, so that you can put the sewer through it, like Rashi compares it to when you put laces into a pair of pants or something. So like, and then like, this is the you can have it. Pair of pants, Rashi says. Laces, a belt, whatever the point is. Like you put a belt through belt loop. So here it's similar. You have a loop through the back of the tefillin, that's called the ma'avarta, and you put the sewer through it, and then that way you can move it back and forth. Yeah.
It's not considered a hefsek.
Then how would it be a hefsek? No, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai that you have to have that ma'avarta. Now, given that the Gemara is going to...
Sure, could be a hefsek.
A hefsek of what? You have the ma'avarta, it's inside the ma'avarta.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, actually, given the Gemara is going to mention soon the idea, the Gemara is going to mention later on the idea that the tefillin has to be square and the Keturah also has to be square. Now, if the Keturah has the ma'avarta sticking out from the back of it, it's not going to be square, it's going to be rectangular. That is why we have these notches. That's why if you look at your tefillin, you see these notches over here on the side, in order that way it shows that the Keturah itself has a square shape, and then the ma'avarta is a separate thing sticking out from the side.
How do you make that square?
It's to be
a rectangle.
No, so that's the thing. Now that you have notched over here and over here, so you can see that the Keturah itself is square.
So the Keturah is
the base minus the ma'avarta. That's why you have it notched like that, so that the ma'avarta becomes now effectively a separate thing, even though it's all made from the same piece of leather, it's effectively a separate thing, and therefore, yeah. Okay. And you have a couple of other explanations on the showing what ma'avarta is, but that's basically what the halacha is. That's basically what the halacha is. Okay. But Omer Abaye, Abaye says, here's another thing, that's halacha l'moshe m'sinai in tefillin. Shin shall tefillin halacha l'moshe m'sinai. That you have to have a shin on the bias, or actually you have two shin and one on each side, is also halacha l'moshe m'sinai, on the shoyad. Now you have, there's a three-headed shin on one side, and a four, on the shoresh, that's what we're talking about. I meant shoresh. You have a three-headed one on one side, and a four-headed one on the other side. A three-headed shin and a four-headed shin. And they actually have. It's also halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And in fact, so nowadays they make them in the same when they put the bias into the hydraulic press to give it a shape, they also make the shinim at the same time. In olden times, they would have to, like, take tongs or whatever and then pull out the creases or whatever in the leather to make a shin right shape. Yeah. It must have been very hard work, I'm sure. You can see in Sfarim descriptions of it, so. The reason why you have a three-headed and a four-headed shin, by the way, one of the explanations that's given is it represents the way the writing was on the look. We know that the writing on the locus wasn't written on the locus, it was carved in, it was carved from end to end. Therefore, wherever you had a shin on the locus, so you have a thing like this going all the way through, but then in that case you have effectively four things of solid stone on the outside of it. So therefore, that's represented by the three-headed shin on one side and the four-headed shin on the other. They mesh together like this, kind of.
Mm. Yes.
Or if you imagine a stone carved with a shin carved out of it, then you have two fingers like of stone going between the two heads of the shin, and two more on the outside surrounding the outside of the shin. That's represented by the four-headed shin. In the Siddur in Das, it talks about also the idea that you have, there's three aspects of Moshin. You got Chochma, Bina, and Das, but Das itself has to actually come down into an actual feelings of Ava and Yira for Hashem. So therefore, the three-headed shin represents the original Moshin, and the four-headed shin represents after Das has bifurcated into Ava and Yira, which are its children, so to speak. So then you have Chochma, Bina, Ava, and Yira. And that's represented by the four-headed shin.
And the first three-headed.
The three-headed shin is just Chochma, Bina, Das. Yeah. Okay. So
the
four-headed is Chochma, Bina, Ava, and Yira. Yeah. Or Chesed and Gvura, which is the thing. This we're saying about the engraving in the Lofos, the idea is the actual engraving of the letters itself into the Lofos is Perush of Stav, and then you have surrounding the Perush of Alpeh. So therefore, yeah, the four-headed shin, which surrounds it and meshes with it, represents Perush of Alpeh. Good. Okay.
You heard what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have Chabad on the right side.
Well, not totally, but yeah. Okay. The Tzorech Shiagia Choris L'Mokam HaSefer. And Abaya says, here's another din, the groove has to go down to where the stitches are. So Rashi explains that here we're going back to the groove. Hold on. Rashi learns that we're talking about the grooves, we're going back to the grooves between one compartment of the Shalrosh and the Nehar. We learned before that the grooves have to be visible if they're not in the fill and a puzzle altogether. Abaya is saying the grooves have to go all the way down to the bottom of the bias where it's stitched together with the Keturah. You have other Rishonim who understand that the chorus over here means the tip of the shin has to go down all the way to where the stitches are. So we do both. We make sure that the chorisim, the notches, the separations between one compartment and the next go all the way down to the bottom. And also that the bottom of the shin is actually standing on top of the stitches.
How did they mesh there in the old days?
Yeah, with great difficulty, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
You almost couldn't make this like this.
Yeah, I have no idea how they made it in the old days, but I guess, you know, you'd get the chanesa on that. There is actually some of the poskim achronim talk about an idea that at some point somebody came up with where they would cut out a separate shin out of parchment or something and glue it onto the outside of the bias. And the poskim achronim discuss the question whether such a thing is kosher or not.
I saw a picture of a Holocaust kid with his filling on, and they were like,
yes, that famous picture where the Nazis are taunting him or whatever. Well, yeah, that's because they started to destroy, they started breaking apart his tefillin, and then they're posing in there for a picture, yeah. And they're obviously not supposed to be separated like that. They're supposed to be together in order to be square, yeah. Rabbini Minahado says that's not really necessary. Keeping the minka or lois todish. As long as you can see either a explanation, the separation, the grooves or the bottom of the shin, as long as it's recognizable, then it's not necessary for it to go all the way to the bottom. Okay, the halacha is like a bayah that I have to see. But Omar Abaya, high kill for the tefillin. Abaya says, here's another din regarding tefillin. The clasp that you write tefillin on, Soros Lemivjitay. You have to check it before you start writing the parashiyas on it. The Dilma Isbe Reusa, because otherwise there might be some kind of problem with it, such as Rashi has a hole, and it would be no good. But in a Ksiva Tama, when you write, the writing has to be perfect. There shouldn't be any holes in the letters, Veleka, and then you're not going to have it. Okay, well, wait. Rav Dimi Minau Da'a says, actually, that's not necessary. Like Tariq. Kumusa Bodhikla. Because you will be able to tell when you write with the pen. Because what it is if it's a small enough hole that the pen with the ink will just glide over it, then it's no problem. The Gemara tells us in Shabbos, if you have a hole that has yoy averis olav, it's so small that the ink will just pass right over it and the quill won't get stopped by it, then it's not a problem. Such a hole is not a problem even if it's in the middle of the stroke of a letter. And if it's a larger hole than that, you'll feel it when you're writing. The pen will get caught on it. So therefore, Rabbi Minhag Dal says it's not totally necessary. I mean, obviously, it's a good idea, but it's not required to check the clasp before you start writing.
Talk about that stuff. Shachapat. There was a Sefer that was finished today.
Oh, that's true, right? Yeah. Okay. Almer of Yitzchak, more dinim about tefillin. Let's say you have to have straps for the tefillin have to be black, is halachah l'moshe mitzinah. Which, by the way, you have a machlokas rishonim, whether that also applies to the bias of the tefillin. You have many rishonim who hold that technically the batim do not contain it at all. However, of course, the minhag is that we always paint them black.
Now, does it have to be black on both sides?
Ah, so the Rambam says that that it should be done on both sides. We have, I think, Sfardim nowadays commonly do that.
Well,
on minhag is... What? Both sides of the
Rasura.
Of the Rasura.
Okay.
But all minhag is not to do that. All minhag is we just paint them on one side and not the other.
Oh, I got it dyed where it's dyed all the way through so it can never become tussle.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, I guess.
You know that?
Yeah.
New thing?
I've heard of it, yeah. A couple
it's
of
not
years,
painted on both sides.
Yeah, a couple of years back, I had a different issue with some of my kids' children where the Rasura were the kind where they have this newfangled thing where they have essentially a plastic film, like a black plastic film attached to them, and then eventually it started coming off. So, yeah, it was no good, and we have to get the Rasura replaced. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So, the Gemara says, nice, we have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Tefillin and kosher and oaten elabamion. Tefillin can only be tied on with the same min, meaning the same min in the tefillin themselves. The bias is made out of leather, so the resorts have to be made out of leather, but it also means the same color. Bein yerukas, they can be green, or yorek can also mean yellow. Bein shchoros, or black, bein levonos, or white. The only restriction is, adumos lo yasi, you shouldn't make them red, but make gnai v'dover achar. Because of a gnai, and because of dover achar. Rashi says gnai is, people are going to think the guy has sores and whatever, and he's always scratching them, and therefore the scratch has gotten red from blood from him, and it would be a gnai for him. And Dover Acha, Rashi says that people are going to think that maybe his wife was Nida, and he had relations with her while he was wearing tefillin. And all the time, remember, people wore tefillin all day long. And you have a Gemara, actually, that mentions, you have a Gemara someplace, I think in Sukkah, that mentions a scenario where a person could be having relations and then realize in the middle he's wearing tefillin, and you have dinim what to do. So like this, you shouldn't dye them red. But you can dye them any other, but you can dye the resource any other color. Well, that's what we have to figure out. So on the one hand, we have Rav Yitzchok saying that they have to be black, halacha l'moshe mitzinah. But the Braita seems to be saying they can be any color except red, yes. There's a different explanation from another one of the Rishonim, I don't remember which one now, who says that gnai is that people are going to think that maybe like he decorated them red like in order to attract blindness or something. Because like they're attracted to the color red, and Dover Acha would be like maybe he's doing like the minigal of David Azaro, who also use red in their rituals or whatever. Anyway, Amar Rav Yehuda, so Rav Yehuda says you're telling me that the tefillin have that the resource of the tefillin has to be made out of leather, but Ma'aseh b'Talmidei of Rabbi Akiva, it happened once with one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, Sheyer Kosher Tefillah B'Loshonis Shel Tcheles, he was tying on a tefillin using ribbons of Tcheles, wool dyed Tcheles. And Rabbi Akiva didn't say anything to him. How is it possible that Tzadik Rabbi Akiva would have seen his Talmud doing something wrong and not tell him he's wrong? So obviously you must be able to put him on with anything, even with woolen straps. So the other Chachamim answered to Rabbi Yehuda, no. Hey, I said, yes, as a matter of fact, apparently Rabbi Akiva didn't see him. And if he had seen him, Yitzhak wouldn't have allowed him because you're not allowed to do that. You have to use leather straps.
How did you know he didn't see it?
Because the Chachamim was saying it's impossible that Rabbi Akiva would have not told him, wouldn't have told him off if he had seen him doing that.
Speaking of Spirit Aimer and the discussion of how many different opinions all of Rabbi Akiva's students had, that's a pretty out there thing to do with Cohen. So maybe he had people that were really interpreting what he said in different directions.
Okay. And another one, Ma'aseh b'Hurkanus b'nei shel Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus. You also have a story with Hurkanus, the son of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus, regular Rabbi Eliezer. Shahoy, same thing. Shahoy kosher tefillah v'loshonis shel agamon. He was tying on a tefillin using ribbons of purple wool. And again, Rabbi Eliezer didn't say anything to him. So the same thing, Rabbi Yehuda argues, Efshar oisat tzadik rab noble nechaboy. How is it possible that you can argue with Rabbi Akiva's Talmud? Okay, he had 24,000 Talmud, maybe he can't keep track of what all of them are doing. But Rabbi Eliezer's own son, you could see him doing this and you wouldn't tell him. So obviously it must be okay. And again, Amr lo, the Chacham say to him, yes, hey. Loi ra oisat, Rabbi Eliezer did not see Hurkanus doing this. Vim ra oisat, lohay manicha. If he had seen him doing it, he wouldn't have allowed him to. By the way, this isn't the only thing that you have where Rabbi Eliezer had a problem with Hurkanus regarding tefillin. We learned in Sanhedrin, we learned in a murder dikamaisa over there about right before Rabbi Eliezer passed away, where it was Erev Shabbos, and Hukanus is all concerned about it's almost Shabbos, we've got to take off my father's tefillin, and Rabbi Eliezer is not letting them, and he explains afterwards that he says, what are you talking about? You're worried about tefillin, which is only an issur d'rabbanan to wear on Shabbos. What about the various issurim d'oraita that are going to happen over here if you don't get ready for Shabbos in time? So, yeah. Okay. Anyway.
What happened?
So the Gemara doesn't mention what happened as far as the tefillin, but the Gemara goes on to say that the Chachamim realized, originally the Chachamim thought that maybe Rabbi Eliezer is not in his right mind or something, and because Hurkanus is telling him he's not allowing him to take off the tefillin, so evidently he doesn't realize it's almost Shabbos, and then when they heard what Rabbi Eliezer said, then they realized that he's still in his right mind, and they went to talk to him, and to Mimavak Bechola the one last time. Yeah. Okay.
That was
right before he died, at the end of the seventh paragraph, at the end of the sixth paragraph of the Sanhedrin. Okay.
What a shame. They missed so much
opportunity there, yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the point is, Katoni Mia ben Yerukas ben Shchoros ben Labonis. So the bottom line is, the second Braisa, or not, rather, this Braisa that we just quoted, says that the straps of the tefillin can be any color, and we had Rabbi Yitzchak saying, it's a lochal meshim sinai, they have to be black. The answer is, like Kasha, can be b'snim, can b'chutz. The answer is, one's talking about the inside towards the body, the other one's talking about the outside. The outside has to be black. The inside can be any color. The inside, the backside, can be any color except red. Question is, even b'snim, my gnai b'davacha. If you're only worried about the inside being any other color, then what's the gnai and what's the davacha? Nobody's going to see the inside anyway. The answer is, it never happens, because sometimes they can turn around. Sometimes they get flipped around, and then people are going to see it. Well, we're going to talk later on how far down the straps of the shorosh have to hang down. Depending on that, then yeah. Okay. If they don't have to hang down, really, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Chana, we learn in a bright, so here's another din about tefillin. The Rambam summarizes this, by the way, based on this whole discussion in the Gemara over here, the Rambam summarizes, there are, I think, eight dinim with tefillin that are halacha l'moshe Sinai. All the other things that they do as far as tefillin are all matters of minhag or whatever, but they've got eight basic things. For example, this stuff we said that they have to have the shinim, that have to be square that we're going to talk about now, that they have to have the full parashiyas, et cetera. There are a number of details that we've said over here that are halachah l'moshe Sinai, and the rest of them are mostly matters of minhag.
Order is also l'moshe Sinai, but we didn't.
But there's
so
it could be that it was lost, or it could be that could be. It's also possible. The same way, you know what? It's interesting. We're coming from Rosh Hashanah now. You have as far as Kiyas Shofar, right? You have the three different ways of making a tshuva, what we call Shavarim, what we call tshuva, or what we call Shavarim tshuva. And if you have the question, Rabbi Goyen was asked the question. So which one is the true tshuva? So the Rambam says that was forgotten during the time of Golus, and that's why eventually they made the Takana to blow all feet. Rabbi Haigoin, though, 100-odd years before the Rambam, was 200 years before the Rambam, was asked, how is it possible that they forgot, don't we blow shofar every year? And he answered that each one of them is a valid tshuva, minasola, and therefore in some places they did one, and in some places they did the other. Eventually, Rabbi Bahu found it that it would be good to make everybody do the same thing in order that people don't think that we have different tshuvas. So in other words, the idea is in some places they blew only what we call a shvarim, with a tshuva, with a tia on either side of it. In some places only what we call tshuva, and in some places shvarim tshuva. And all of them were valid, afi Torah. But eventually the Chachamim decided it's good to make one common thing for everyone. So it could be the same thing. What the Rebbe is talking about over here, that to begin with, you have these two different things, Rashi's and Abed Atam's order. So it could be when Moshe originally gave the mitzvah to the Yidden, he informed them there are two possible ways you can do it. Rashi's way, what we call Rashi's way and Rabbeinu Tam's way, and eventually, in later times, the argument came which one is the primary one. But in other words, that's how you come to have that they found ancient tefillin from the time of the second Beit Hamikdash, where some of them are written according to Rashi's Seder, and some of them are written according to Rabbeinu Tam's Seder. So, yeah. All right.
So the real machlokes is between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam.
That's what I'm saying. We call it Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam because they're the most famous proponents of it in our Gemara over here. But the machlokes goes back long, long before that.
Who started that?
Yeah, that's the thing. According to what the Rebbe is saying, it may have gone all the way back to when Moshe originally gave the Yidden the Mitzvah.
Yeah, and it's also in the Zohar.
Oh, both of them are in the Zohar, yeah. Yeah.
Predates the Gemara.
This is also true, yeah.
So we have to get some work for Mashiach to determine whether...
Oh, he's going
to
have plenty of work.
Okay. No, but there's also an idea, again, that from the Zohar, Tikkuni Zohar or something, that Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin are more closely associated with Yemos HaMashiach. In fact, the Orach HaShulchan says that's another argument for the importance of Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, because he says, okay, nowadays the halacha is passed to Magrashi, because before Yemos HaMashiach, but eventually it will be.
So eventually, a lot of things be like
that. According to what he said, yeah. Yeah, same idea as we talk about the soul, the shama, yeah. Okay, anyway, let's go on. Tum. Tulin miroboyz halachal moshe misina. This text is going to have to be square, is halachal moshe misina. Omer Rapapa, and Rapapa says that doesn't just apply to the bias of the tefillin, the tofron, it means the stitches of the tefillin. So actually, Rashi actually explains, it doesn't mean, okay, so most of the Rishonim understand that it means the stitches themselves have to be done in a square pattern, which is how we do them nowadays. Rashi actually has a different understanding of it. Rashi says what it means is, when you say the stitches have to be square, all we mean is that when you're stitching up the tefillin, be careful that you don't pull the square of the tefillin out of shape. But according to everybody else, it means the stitches themselves have to be done in a square pattern, and that's how we do it. Okay, so that's the chakron. Uva alachsonon, and also their diagonals have to be identical. Because the point is, if we're saying mirubois, the word mirubois doesn't necessarily in and of itself have to mean square. First of all, it could mean rectangular.
Mirubois.
It could, but it could mean that it has four right angles, but it, so it could mean that it has, could mean that it's rectangular. It could also mean this diamond shape. It could be a meruba in a looser sense can also mean like a diamond shape where you have all four sides of the same length, but the angles are not 90 degrees each. So therefore, you also have to measure the diagonals and make sure that the diagonals are identical as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, Lema Messiah, can we say that this Braise and Rapapa's explanation is supported based on from the following Mishnah in Megillah? The Mishnah says, agula. If somebody makes a tefillin round, sakona, then there's a danger in it because he may be walking through a door and bump his tefillin against the lintel of the door, and because they're round, they'll knock into his brain. When they're square, you're doing the mitzvah properly, therefore the mitzvah protects you.
Okay.
But when they're round, then it's not the proper way of doing the mitzvah. There ain't but mitzvah, and there's no mitzvah in it. So on the face of it, that braisa shows that they have to be, that mishnah rather, shows that it has to be square. The answer is, omer papa, not necessarily, because masnitzin da'avida ki amguza. The mishnah could be talking about when is it a sakana, and when is there no mitzvah in it, when the tefillin are made round like a nut, meaning the bottom of them is round also, the oval or whatever. The point is, the bottom of them that sits on the head is also round. That's where you have the danger that it could penetrate his skull.
What about the top is round and the bottom is
square? That's the point. From the Mishnah, you don't have any proof. If the bottom is flat, like our tefillin, and the top is round, you don't have any proof from that Mishnah that it's no good. For that, we need the braisa. That mirubois is halacha l'moshe misina. So that's the halacha, but you can't necessarily prove it from that Mishnah. Okay. Another thing. Omer Rav Huna, tefillin, kol zman shepnei tavla kayemet. When it comes to tefillin, as long as the Tavla literally means a table, but it means of it here, the outside leather of the batim. As long as it's intact, ksheres, then the tefillin are kosher. Meaning in other words, the bias. We're talking primarily the bias.
Okay.
So as long as the outside of it is whole, even if you have, now you could have, conceivably, remember, each compartment has, each compartment has a wall that is adjacent to the wall of the next one, right? It goes in and out like this. So according to on the surface of it, and we have different explanations in Rishonim, but on the surface of it, Rav Huna is saying, even if you have holes on the inside between one compartment and the next, it's still kosher as long as the outside is intact.
If they communicate these two holes from
yeah.
two parts?
Yeah. So of course, on the surface.
A hole here, let's say, and a hole here?
Yeah. Yeah,
that would still be kosher.
So according on the face of it, what Rav Huna is saying is that would be kosher. Again, you have different explanations in the Rishonim what exactly Rav Huna means, but that's the simplest understanding of it. Rav Chista Omer, Rav Chista says not necessarily. Nifsiku shtayim kasheris. If you have two of the compartments, it's not two of the compartments, but rather two of the walls are broken, have holes in them. Then they're kosher. Shalosh sulis. But if you have three of them broken, then it's possible, even though the outside is completely intact. Well, so wait. There's a little bit of complication to this. Give me the Gemara Menachos that's laid down over there, because it's got some useful diagrams for this purpose. Thank you. Okay. So Rashi actually gives a couple of different explanations of what's going on. But let's start with Rashi's first explanation. Is suppose you have like this. Suppose you have that you have, let's say, over here, and you have one of the walls of compartment number two has a hole in it,
right.
And one of the walls of compartment number three on the other side also has a hole in it. So the common wall between two and three is intact on both sides.
Right.
So that would be that two are ripped, and we're saying, according to Rashi's first explanation, then Rav Chista is saying it would still be okay. Shalosh, Shalosh, but if you have three of them ripped, then it would be possible, for example, over here, you have a hole in one of the walls of one, not the outside, between one and two, not the outside wall of one, because that for sure would be possible.
Right.
But the inside wall between one and two, another one, the inside wall between, Rashi says like this, let's look in the next couple of lines of the Gemara, and then we'll start looking at the diagram. Okay, so the Chista said if two are broken, it's kosher, three are kosher. So, Omar Rava, Hoda Amit, Shayim Cheres, but this that you're saying that two are kosher, Loy Amoran, Ela Zesh, Loy Keneged Zeh. That would only be if one of them is not parallel to the other. Avol Zesh, Neged Zeh, Sulis. But if you have one parallel to the other, then they would be kosher. Okay, so Rashi gives two explanations over here. One is, again, that when we say zeh shaloi keneged zeh means that the walls that you have none of the two walls that are broken are have nothing in common between them. They're not contiguous, as opposed to over here they're sort of contiguous in that one of them is one of the walls on one side of two and the other one is the other wall on the other side of two. So even though compartment two itself is still whole, but you have a hole going into it from one and another one going into it from three.
So one second, you're saying if it's between one and two and three?
So even though two itself is intact, even though the two walls on the two sides of two itself are intact.
In other words.
No, look at diagram number two over here.
Between one and two and between?
So the first possibility is you have one of the walls of two and one of the walls of three, and they're on different sides.
Right.
So the entire common wall between two and three, both sides of it, is still intact. The other possibility is that you have, between one and two, and between two and three, on each side, you have one hole. So therefore...
So here, between one and two and...
At versus between the, three and four, and between three and four,
and four
only. Here, it's between one and two, and between two and three.
Okay, so that would be...
According to Rashi's first explanation, the first one would be kosher, the second one is possible because they're in adjacent compartments.
So
Rashi's second explanation is that zeh shaloi keneged zeh is that kind would also be okay. The kind that would be a problem is where you have two rips where they're both in the same wall but in different places. So like one from this side and one from this side.
That's in addition to the other ones being contiguous.
Yes. So in other words, they have to be on two sides of the same wall. Yeah.
So if you would have, let's say, between one and two, two or three,
according to Rashi's first explanation, that would be possible. According to Rashi's first explanation, that would be possible. According to Rashi's second explanation, they would be kosher.
No. The
second
explanation is.
Okay, the first explanation of Rashi is as long as you have one complete bias between them, then they're good, but if you don't, then it's possible.
Right.
The second explanation of Rashi is that you don't have the two holes are not adjacent to each other. That as long as you have that over here, the two holes are on two sides of the one compartment, but they're not adjacent to each other because one's on this side and one's on this side, then according to the second explanation, would be good.
So what is it?
Okay. You have different opinions. What is the halacha? So the halacha, most of the poskim pass in like Rashi's first explanation. It depends whether you have one complete bias, whether one complete bias in fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're saying
between one and two versus between three and four, then it would for sure be kosher. And even if you had between one and two and between three and four, as long as you had the complete bias number two was intact, then you'd also be okay. Yeah. Okay, so that's, but if you had three whiffs, then it would be possible regardless. Amar Rava, Hada Amit Shtayim Kshodis, and further Rava says, this that you're saying, that if two of them are broken, then it's kosher. Lo Yamarin, sorry, you said that, El Zosha Lekinek Zeh, Aval Zekinek Zeh Psulis, but if they're one adjacent to the other, according to the different explanations, then they're Psul, the Zekinek Zeh Nami Lo Yamarin, and even if they're adjacent to each other also, that only applies, B'chad, El B'chadsa, only if the Tefillin are new. Aval Batikza, but if the Tefillin are old, less one bar, then there's no problem with that. Now, why would that be? Rashi explains, because if the tefillin are new, and already there was developing holes between the batim, then it was obviously defective leather in the first place. So therefore, you have to pass all the tefillin. As opposed to, if they're old and they develop holes, okay, things that are used for a long time are eventually going to develop holes. So therefore, that's not such a big deal. The Rif understands that last part the other way around. The Rif understands that if the tefillin are new, there's less of an issue, because then the holes are not likely to get any bigger. The leather is still strong. As opposed to if the tefillin are old, the holes are likely to get bigger and bigger. Okay. Okay. Now, on top of all that, you have halakhic kindness of the Rish.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, there you have the Rosh, but yeah. Anyway. Okay. I don't know, they have it in the back of some, they have it in the back of the paper, usually where the Rish is printed, yeah. I don't, maybe they don't have it in these volumes, maybe they have it in a different one. Okay, anyway. The Rambam has a whole different understanding of this business of two or three being broken. The Rambam understands we're not talking about the walls between one compartment and the next. We're talking about the stitches. That if you have two versus three stitches broken, and if the stitches are next to each other versus not next to each other or whatever, then that's when the issue would be. And the Rambam also understands that the difference between new and old also refers to that. That if the tefillin are new and the stitches are ripped, then you don't have as much of a problem as you do if the tefillin are old and the stitches ripped.
So are you saying that according to the Rambam, the holes don't matter?
The Rambam doesn't talk about the idea of a hole, so maybe, according to the Rambam, holes wouldn't matter yet. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is mentioned like both of them. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is that it involves the holes between the compartments and also the stitches. Yeah. So what is the definition for this purpose of old versus new tefillin? If you pull on the leather, and remember in those days the bottom of tefillin were made out of soft leather, so they could easily stretch. So if you pull on the leather to stretch it, the hodder cholin, and then when you let go of it, it goes back to its previous shape. Then we consider that old tefillin. The idach.
That's from the beginning is old.
Yes. So the idach, and otherwise, if it doesn't get back its original shape, chatzasa, then we consider it new tefillin. That would be the definition.
Yours would be a tefillin then.
Well, nowadays tefillin are made hard. You really can't. I mean, you pull as much as you want. It's not going to get out of shape. So therefore, you're right. You'd have to have other criteria for determining whether they're new or old. The Rambam actually, okay, the inami, or another possibility. What you do is, another way of doing it is if you hang the tefillin by their straps, if you hold them like this, hanging from their straps, and that causes that the mavarter will be stretched out to go along with it, because again, holding it like that will cause it to stretch. Again, then we consider that those tefillin are new. The idach, and if not, if it doesn't stretch with it, atikra, then they're considered old tefillin. Again, that doesn't apply. That's Rashi's second explanation. Rashi's first explanation of this last one is that if the tefillin are such that if you pull them by the resua, the mavarta will break off, then it's considered old tefillin. If it's strong enough that it won't break off, then it's considered new tefillin. And the Rambam, who explains this whole thing, is talking about the stitches. He says what it means is if the stitches are broken such that if you were to hold the tefillin by the, and you have the remaining stitches over there, if it'll fall open, then it's considered old tefillin, otherwise it's considered new tefillin.
For us, it's always new.
So for us, practically speaking, it's always new, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Now let's talk about, we've been talking about the tefillin or the stitches of them breaking. Now let's talk about the resource breaking. Abaya have a yosef hamedir of yosef. Abaya one time was sitting in the Talmud in front of Rav Yosef, istikle resur the tefillin, and a strap of the tefillin broke. Omalei, so he asked Rav Yosef, maul mikzvei, am I allowed to tie those two broken ends back together so I can continue wearing these tefillin? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef tells him no. Ukshar tomksin. The pasuk says you should tie them, which we darish in that to mean kshira tama. Should say kshira tama. It has to be a perfect. It has to be a perfect tying. So Rashi says two explanations on that. One is it means it has to look nice. If you have an extra knot there in the middle, it doesn't look nice anymore. The other explanation is it has
two parts of the
rapport. Between the two parts of the rapport that broke in. Or the other explanation.
If you tie them with a thread or something.
Hold on. Rashi's second explanation is it has to be a complete rasua, not one that's tied back together. Okay. Omelet of Acha Breder of Yosef of Rashi. Maul Mitzvere. What about though? Would you be allowed to sew the broken ends back together? The island Shfidel Agav, and then make sure that the stitches are on the inside, so that way it's not noticeable from the outside, and the outside is still looks whole. Okay, but you could. Omar, so Ravashi answers him, Pukhazi mai amadvar. Go out and see what the people usually do. Now, Rashi understands that to mean it's to be machmir. The people don't do that. When people fill and restore breaks, they don't try stitching it back together. They just discard it and get new restores. Therefore, that's what you should do. And that's how most of the postkin paskin. Tosfos brings over here that Rabbeinu Tam actually says it's l'kula, that it means that the belt does that. Therefore, you're allowed to do that. So in Shulchan Aruch, both opinions are brought. The Rosh is the one who holds, like Rabbeinu Tam, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, who holds that you are allowed to stitch them. However, he says you would have to stitch them with gidim. Again, you'd have to use sinews of an animal rather than regular thread or whatever, and you'd have to do it on the inside. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with that. So you shouldn't do that. You should just get new restores. If you have no choice, and if you don't, you're not going to be able to put on filling, then you can go ahead and follow that opinion.
Midyevah.
Amar Papa, here's another din. Gardume Rasuis Kshemus, your Papa says. The leftover stumps of Rasuis are kosher.
To become Rasuis?
No, meaning in other words, if you had, well, you could use them, you would reuse them as Rasuis, sort of, but no, what we're talking about over here is, in other words, so like this you have the Shorosh, you have the knot on the back of the Shorosh, and then you have the straps hang down from there. If those straps broke off, and all you have left is little bits of them, then the tefillin are still, then the restores are still kosher. After the dowel, we're talking about. However, the Gemara says v'lav milsi. However, that's not correct. You do need more of a size than that. Now, Rashi is saying we're talking about the shorosh. You have many rishonim who say that actually we're talking about the shoryab over here, because the shoryab, the Gemara is going to say soon, also the strap has a minimum length. Anyway, how do we know that that's not correct? That the rasuas actually have a minimum length, and therefore, if you just have stumps left of them, it's no good. Mid'amri b'nei Rav Chiya, because you see that the sons of Rav Chiya said a din as follows: gardume tchelas, the stumps of the tchelas threads. So in a few days, we're going to start learning about tchelas and sittis, yeah? So there, if you have the tchelas threads broke off, and you have less than the shear of them, then they're kosher. That's the point. The gadrume ezov, and also as far as the ezov, where you need ezov in order to sprinkle paradrum water. So like this, if you start off with a complete branch of ezov, and then it breaks off, and all you have left is a tiny little bit, shade, and then those are kosher. But the difference is, the reason why Bnei Rav Chiya mentioned only those is because there's a basic difference between sittis and ezov on the one hand, versus the restorative of tefillin on the other hand. Namely, the Tosfos will do Tashmishei Mitzvah. Ezov and Tcheles are only Tashmishei Mitzvah, meaning in and of themselves, they don't have Kedusha. They're needed for the purpose of a Mitzvah. They're needed in order to fulfill the Mitzvah of Tzitzis, or the Mitzvah of sprinkling Parah Adonai.
Why
water.
Is not Ezov Tashmishei Mitzvah and not the Mitzvah?
Because the Mitzvah itself is to wear Tzitzis. The Tcheles is a necessity in order to accomplish that Mitzvah, but the Tcheles itself doesn't have any Kedusha. Technically, as a matter of fact, once tzitzis become possible, technically you're allowed to throw them away. They actually have no kedusha. The minhag has developed that you use them as bookmarks, as sfarim, or you otherwise don't just toss them away casually. But ikra din, you are allowed to. As opposed to, with the tefillin, aval hocha, the tashmishei kedusha ninu, but over here, the resuas of the tefillin are tashmishei kedusha, they're used in service of the tefillin themselves, which have actual intrinsic kedusha, then we don't say that. Then we say they have a minimum size, and if they're any less than that minimum size, then they're possible.
We had an argument about, a discussion about the kedusha of the mantle and the kedusha of the
still in the...
That's true, but the mantle itself is an example of... the mantle is another example of Tashmishi Kedusha. That's true, because it serves the Sefer Torah, which has Kedusha. True, yeah. Okay. So the question is, Miklal de'islu shiura, so based on what we're saying, it sounds like the Resuas have a minimum length. So the question is, how? Well, because we just said, if the Gadrumim are possible, then obviously that means there has to be a minimum length beyond which they would be possible. So the Kama Shiurai, so what exactly is that Shiur? Now again, Rashi learns that this whole discussion over here is talking about the Shorush. So Rashi understands, we're talking about, in other words, after you go past the knots, past the keshes, how much do the straps have to extend beyond that? Omer, Rami, but first we'll talk according to Rashi. According to Tosfos brings from the Aruch, and most of the other Rishonim also understand that we're actually going to be talking about the Shoyah. Oh, wait. Omer, Rami, Bachama, Omer, Shlokish, Ad Etzatzrada. So, Rami Bachama says in the name of Shlokish, the amount is up until the Etzatzrada, which means Rashi says it means the index finger. So, Rav Kahana Machli Kofel, so Rav Kahana showed that what that means is in other words, the length of the Resuah beyond the knot has to be the distance that you could go from your index finger to your middle finger. That distance, that length over there, is the amount that you could go from one to the other. That is the minimum length of the Resuah. Yeah, I don't know, whatever it is. A tefach is a whole hand. A tefach is the size of a whole hand. Rav Ashi Machli Poshut. And Rav Ashi said, I agree that it involves, Kofuk would mean, Poshut would mean, Rav Ashi Machli Poshut. Rav Ashi showed that it meant the amount from the thumb to the index finger, which is larger. That's like twice the length. Yeah.
Here we said before from the...
So here we said from the index finger to the middle finger, and Rav Ashi is saying, no, a larger amount from the thumb to the index. That's one explanation. You have a number of other explanations among Rishonim, among others being that maybe kofuf means when you just keep them in a normal position, like just in a relaxed position, versus poshut would be when you extend them out as far as you can. But either way, it's talking about the same two things. Because it's not. However, okay, again, all of this is according to Rashi. We're saying according to Rashi, the minimum amount for the straps of the shorosh beyond the knot is one of these various shiurim, the 2 inches, 2.5 or 4, whatever it is.
The one from the machmir is from the thumb to the index?
Yeah, and then the maple would be from the index to the middle. Tosfos brings from the oruch that we're not talking about the shorosh at all. We're actually talking about the shoyah. The question is, how long does the resuah of the shoyad have to be? And the answer is, the minimum length of it has to be that you should be able to, after you put it on your arm, after you put it on your bicep and tighten it, you should have enough resuah to be able to extend to espatrada, which Tosfos brings from the oral, espatrada means the middle finger. That's how long the resuah has to be at minimum. Long enough to extend from the muscle, from the bicep to the middle finger.
Is that obvious?
No, it's not so obvious. According to Rashi, we were talking about the Shorosh. According to Rashi, the Shoyad, the Resuah, doesn't necessarily have a minimum length. And then,
It's not obvious because you do it every day, but yeah. No, because the Resuah has to go around your middle finger.
That's true. That's a minute. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to have time now, so it's almost time for Myers. But according to this explanation, Kofuf and Kosher means, does it have to be able to extend to the middle finger when you have it bent downward? Or does it have to extend the middle finger when you have it in its normal position, which would be a little bit longer. But either way, according to that, it would mean the minimum amount for the Shoyah. According to that, it comes out, Tosfos says, and the Gemara is not addressing the question, how long the Resuah of the Shoyah are happening. We have a few different opinions among the Shoyim, one of them being that the minimum, the Tosfos brings from one of them, the minimum, and I think it's also in the Zohar, that the minimum is the one should go at least to his heart, and the other one to his navel. And then you have other opinions, including one of them should go down to his mila, and the other one down to his knees, which is how we do nowadays. That we have the left one goes down approximately to the mila, and the other, maybe I'm wrong, maybe not to the knees. One of them, the minimum has to be to the navel, and the other one to the mila. I don't remember exactly. Whatever it is, we have the right one is longer for chesed, should be longer. No, that's the thing. If there is that minimum amount, therefore, the halacha is, if the resuas of the shorosh that are hanging down are less than even the least of those, so one of them doesn't extend to the heart and the other one doesn't extend to the navel, then those resuas are possible and you have to get new ones. If they extend down at least that amount, then fine, it's not ideal because you have the other opinions that they should extend out further, but they're not possible.
So the most machmir is the
So the least machmir,
the least machmir, the most
is the heart,
is
right?
The
no, so you have again, roish echad ad tiburay v'roish hashen yadalei. One to his navel, the other one to his heart. So like this. Those are the minimum amounts that says in Shulchan Aruch, if the surahs are any shorter, they hang down, the shorosh are any shorter than that, then the surahs are no good. Any longer than that is
not.
What? If it's longer than that, it's kosher. They can be as long as you want, yeah. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, that's the chance.